Let us listen to our scripture, Isaiah 64, 1 through 4. Oh, that you would tear open the heavens and come down so that the mountains would quake at your presence, as when fire kindles brushwood and the fire causes water to boil, to make your name known to your adversaries, so that the nations might tremble at your presence. When you did awesome deeds that we did not expect, you came down the mountains, quaked at your presence. From ages past, no one has heard, no ear has perceived, no eye has seen any God besides you who works for those who wait for him. In our morning scriptures, we're directed to prepare and to stay awake. We ask that God will come among us and make his presence known. He is the potter. We are the clay.
The gospel gives us hope and anticipation of our God, who is loving and just.
Thanks be to God.
Let's listen to what the Lord would teach us today. This is from Mark, the 13th chapter, beginning with the 28th verse. Jesus said, "From the fig tree learn its lesson. As soon as its branches become tender and put forth its leaves, you know that summer is near. So also, when you see these things taking place, you know that he is near at the very gates. Truly, I tell you, this generation will not pass away until all things have taken place. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. But about that day or hour, no one knows, neither the angels in heaven nor the Son, but only the Father. Beware, keep alert, for you do not know when the time will come. It is like a man going on a journey when he leaves home and puts his slaves in charge, each with his work, and commands the doorkeeper to be on watch. Therefore, keep awake, for you do not know when the master of the house will come, in the evening, or at midnight, or at cockcrow, or at dawn. Or else he may find you asleep when he comes suddenly. And what I say to you, I say to all, keep awake." The word of the Lord. I invite you to be seated. Is it sermon time now? Merry Christmas. I might get in trouble saying that, huh? Happy holidays, yes, exactly. There are several things. I could get in trouble here because there are some, and I served a church, and one of the men was furious that we might sing Christmas carols or talk about Christmas during the season of Advent. He says, "We don't sing Christmas carols or do Christmas things until after the 25th. Well, one year we tried that. Nobody wanted to sing Christmas carols between 25th and 31st and days following. And I dare you to tell the merchants and all of the industry that it's not Christmas yet. So I could get in trouble here, because technically it is only the season of Advent of preparing. But Merry Christmas. Now I might get in trouble because of that inclusive bit. There are some who don't recognize Jesus as the Christ, that Jesus has not yet come. They are still awaiting the arrival of the Christ. There are others who are not Christian, and so celebrating by saying Merry Christmas is not including them. I'm sorry, this is the celebration of the birth of the King, a baby born in low estate in a stable in Bethlehem. And we celebrate his birthday, and we prepare for his birthday, and we have a mass to worship the Lord. Merry Christmas. Our banner is up. All of our decorations are here. We always have a wonderful time gathering and putting things together and scratching our heads. There's always that question, how did we do it last year? And where did we put everything after we put it away last year? Anybody else having those troubles? I'm glad to hear that. It's not just me. But we have decorations all around the livery of the church, and this is my favorite season for livery. It's important to note this is a high church season. This is a very important, but it may not be the most important church season. Perhaps Easter, if one were to think about it, theologically, Easter might be more important to us as Christians. But Christmas, there's something about Christmas. I told the kids we have the Advent wreath up where it's not exactly a wreath, it's kind of a puddle. So we have the Advent puddle going this season. And the candles on them, how many of you have seen the Advent wreath before and heard of the candles on the wreath? And we all know the names of the candles, don't we? I went to the United Methodist webpage, and this year the candles are the prophets, Mary, Joseph, and the shepherds. I didn't buy it either. We know them, hope, joy, peace, love, in whatever order. And we're doing some research on what it is called, Gaudete. Sunday, Richard? We haven't looked it up. We will get back to you. Richard will have a short burst of a book that will... The pink candle has special meaning in the Catholic Church, but I had heard of it on the side, but we will explore and get back to you. And the Lutheran Church as well, from what I understand. Gaudete Sunday? I'm off track here. I'm lost. Regardless of the focus of the Advent candle wreath, they are a countdown to Christmas. As I told the kids, they're a way of saying 1, 2, 3, 4, and then Christmas, and we celebrate that. And it's important to celebrate that, and I have seen other people celebrating that. I've seen people in my neighborhood. The day before Thanksgiving, my neighbor down the way across the street was outside with a ladder doing something to his house. And it didn't dawn on me until a little bit later that it was Christmas lights going up. The day before Thanksgiving, I was watching the news and the two anchors came on and the two men were talking to each other and one of them said, "My neighbor was putting up Christmas lights today, it was so balmy." And the other anchor says, "Well, he had dare not turn them on till after Thanksgiving." And the first anchor said, "But how do you make sure that all of the lights work?" He says, "Well, you have to take them all into the garage and close the door and then turn the lights on, make sure they work, and then hang them." We have some purists out there. My neighbor noticeably did not really turn his on until after Thanksgiving, and it's a beautiful and exciting house. Have you seen decorations? We were out last night after dark, and Melissa kept saying, Dad, look, and I was trying to drive and look and drive and look. It's not the best situation for us. I was going slow in the neighborhood, so it wasn't a risk. But just down the street from us, there's a beautiful manger scene. We don't have a creche in here, and that is something we might think about as we continue. I know that there's at least one, maybe two out in the outside here, but the manger scene. And I've seen it on people's front lawns. Beautiful. The baby in the manger. And a lot of people don't understand the manger is a feed trough. I grew up with horses and cows. I know what a feed trough looks like. Mary and Joseph. Donkeys, camels, sheep, shepherds, angels. It's a beautiful scene. On the railing behind it was Santa Claus. And Frosty, and there were elves, and there were reindeer, and a sleigh, and gifts, and presents. In an earlier day, when I began ministry, I was kind of an intolerant sort. And such a display might have just grated on me a little bit. I might have grumbled a little bit thinking about the mix of religious and secular. Has our Christmas been hijacked? And then I got to thinking about Jesus, and he said, "If they are not against us, they are for us." And where is grace, and where is forgiveness, and where is understanding? So let's talk about the secret of the candy cane. Over the years, I've had different occasions around the candy cane and had different stories that I've encountered about the source of the candy cane. There's one, and it It goes like this. 18th century Europe. And it was a time when Christianity was had to be practiced in secret, so people couldn't share openly their faith and their celebration, and they couldn't talk about Christmas. And so they made candy canes to share with one another, to remember the season, to remember Jesus and the shepherd and the good shepherd and all of the things about that. The problem is that 18th century Europe was so predominantly Christian that if you proposed any other faith, you might be in trouble. So although it's a beautiful story and it's a fun way of thinking about the candy cane, it is a story. There's a second story, and actually it might fit a little bit better. It was a Catholic priest. It was actually the choir masters, I heard the story, and they were celebrating Mass, but there were kids in worship, big kids and little kids, and some of them became restless because the pastor tended to go on and on. We don't know anybody like that, do we? But the choir master was concerned because the kids fidgeted and got noisier and noisier. And so he went to a candy maker and asked the candy maker to make a treat that would last long enough to keep the kids busy and keep their mouths shut to get through the service. And he shaped it in the shape of a candy cane so that it could have a good handle and it would be a symbol of Jesus. That's an interesting and fun and delightful story. There's another story. This one says that in 1919, a candy maker named Bob McCormick was in Albany, Georgia. And he had a candy factory. And he made candy canes. And in that day and age, a candy cane was just a straight piece of hard candy with spirals, red and white spirals. They sold some with crooks on the end, but they were very expensive because they were labor intensive. This is mass production. This is machine made. These were candy canes that were drawn and cut and wrapped all in an automated process. But making the crook meant that they had to stop with each cane and shape it as it was produced. He had a brother-in-law named Gregory Harding Keller, a Catholic priest. And Keller recognized the problem, but he thought candy canes were a pretty nifty thing, and he invented an automated device to make the crook on the end. Believe it or not, I Googled, and there is a Keller automated device to make crooks. At any rate, Mr. McCormick integrated this device, and candy canes became popular and inexpensive and widely available. Which story is the most important one? Which secret story is the one best to tell? And how shall we respond? Certainly we need to be aware of only the true story, shouldn't we? And yet there's a lesson in the candy cane. Regardless of the story you hear, or those who might disagree about the origins, and those who might have different opinions about its symbolisms, there are things about the candy cane that we can use to draw us together. And when you hear one of the other stories, you can say, did you also know that the candy cane is shaped in the form of a hook? And it may not have originally been intended for that, but here is the symbol of the Good Shepherd. Jesus, the Good Shepherd, and the shepherd's crook. And if you invert the candy cane, you have a letter. What letter do we have? The sacred name of Jesus. The candy is also a hard candy. And from that, we might remember a Bible passage about Jesus and saying, upon this rock I found my church. And that Jesus is the rock upon which the church is founded through Simon Peter. There is another piece of the candy cane that is delightful. It is striped with white and red. The white is pure white to symbolize the purity of Christ, and the red his blood. Is that why the candy cane was made the way it was made? Does it matter? As Christians, we're about experiencing a society that is engaging the magic of the season. This house that I told you about with a manger and the secular and the religious symbols all mixed together. In an earlier day, I might have been a little bit grinchy. I might have been a bit grinchy. I haven't seen any Grinches on a yard decoration yet. Has anybody seen any Grinches? Maybe we need to put some of those out there. But as I began to journey with Christ, I began to say, not what divides us, but what grows us together. It's all right to celebrate the magic of Elf and Olaf and Frosty and all of the magic of the season and stories. I have a very soft spot in my heart for Charlie Brown and that tree that he picks that looks horrible. And those are all a part of the journey and the magic of the season. And the magic of the season is that we can bring all of that together and still worship because we have magic to offer a community searching for something. Searching for spiritual magic as well. The magic of a baby born poor. So poor they're in a barn and no bed but the hay trough. And the family unknown. And the family having to flee as refugees to Egypt, where they were hosted and welcomed on a lesson about how we should be about strangers in our midst. We are aware of a season of magic, of the birth of the Christ, of magic of angels, of heavenly hosts, and of stars. Let's share that. Let's share that right alongside all of the secular things occurring. Let us journey to Christ. And as Christ would have us, let us gather people together, not finding division, but finding unity. Let's celebrate Christ. Let's celebrate this first candle, the candle of hope. Hope found in our faith in Jesus Christ and the love and grace He brings. Let's celebrate the magic of the season and the opportunities as a people are about being generous beyond their normal generosity. People being generous and forgiving and accepting of one another. And let's offer each other candy canes often and often, shall we?